and welcome to another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. As we post this, we're about 2 weeks removed from the tax deadline for Canadians. Got yours filed yet? Got your refund? Yeah, me neither, at least on that last one. Today, we've got two interviews that tackle issues around tax, an episode of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast I never thought we'd be doing. Up first, we chat with ESET malware researcher Marc Echenlevelle about an SMS phishing campaign that he and the team at ESET have discovered in their run-up for tax season this year. Now, if your email inbox is anything like mine, email purporting to be from the CRA is nothing new to you. It's amazing how many refunds I'm apparently eligible for if I will just click the pretty link. But SMS phishing is a bit of a newer game and plays on a slightly different dynamic than does traditional email-based phishing attempts. Marc Echenlevelle will take us through what they discovered, how they discovered it, what it all means for the security landscape, and what we can do about it. After that, we've got an interview taped at Sage's recent Sage Sessions event in Toronto, where I chat with podcast regular Paul Struthers, Managing Director of Sage Canada, about tax policy. Sage, being concerned with SMB customers as they are, has taken a look at tax policy and how it impacts small and micro businesses. Long story short, not good, but could be worse. Would you be surprised to learn that small businesses not only get to pay more proportionately, but get to spend a higher percentage of their total available working hours to do so? Yeah, not a great deal for sure. Paul will walk us through what they found, what it all means to small businesses and the partners that serve them, and what we can do, both from a short-term and long-term view, to try to fix the problem. It's a great pair of interviews, so let's get right into it. First, my chat with Marc Echenlevelle, and then Paul Struthers. Marc Echenlevelle, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It seems like there's always something around tax season. It's such a, I don't know if you'd call it a low-hanging fruit or an easy target or whatever it may be, but can you tell us a little bit about what you guys discovered in terms of the SMS phishing scam this year?
So it all started back in November. It wasn't a tax team message back at the time, but I did receive a text message that where the Canada Revenue Agency wants to send me some kind of refund or money via indirect transfer.
Yeah.
So obviously this was fishy because the Canada Revenue Agency do not send refund over indirect transfer. We didn't investigate much at the time, but then we saw back in April, we saw pages with, instead of indirect transfer, it was a fake Canadian Revenue Agency page where it was asking for a lot of personal information, including things like credit card numbers and social insurance numbers and mother maiden's name and so on.
Sure.
We actually saw also that they were using text messages. So we opened up an investigation. We dug a little bit more and found out that they were actually it was actually operated by the same group of people. And they are doing this kind of scam since early 2017.
So can you sort of walk me through maybe in a little bit more depth how you sort of came to discover it was these people in particular, and maybe if you have anything on how widespread this was at its apex.
Sure. So we basically tied everything together because they use fake identities to register the domains they use. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to be as legitimate as possible. So they will register names. So for example, for the April campaign, they would use CanadianCR.com or Canada-CR.com, sorry.
Right.
They would use that to make believe that to the victims that it's actually a legitimate website, where in fact it isn't. Like all the information typed in are not sent to the CRA, but the actual malicious, the fraudsters behind the scheme. So they use those fake identities, and they kind of reuse the same for example, postal code or email address.
Yeah.
So we were able to see that they, using this identity, they registered domains since a long time ago. And they also use this very similar infrastructure. So the where the phishing page is hosted is actually almost in always in the same hosting. They always use the same hosting providers.
Okay.
So we were able to link it as well using this method. And thirdly, the way that they do the phishing pages, they use a common panel to manage all the information they receive,
mm-hmm.
Called UPanel. It's something you can buy on the underground market, and they again almost not all of them, but almost all of the pages use that method to submit and they use that method to manage the information they receive.
All right.
So this is how we were able to link it all together.
All right.
Anything
about this attack that was particularly unique or you know, obviously, I guess the context of it, the timing of it with tax being on the mind of the average Canadian. But, you know, what sort of made this unique and what was the potential damage here? Do you have any info on how likely this is to get clicked on?
So yes, they were offering I think $1,400 refund. So that's kind of interesting for the victim. But of course, it's not a real refund.
Yes.
Something that's unique to this threat is spam by text messages.
Right.
So we're kind of used to like seeing spam phishing in emails.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of protections for to protect ourselves against these kind of threats. We have spam filter. We have URL blocking. We have a lot of layers of security we can use to protect ourselves. But when it comes to text messages, it's a lot more difficult to, for example, see that the domain is insecure. It is not the encryption. There's no encryption over the HTML page.
Right.
The domain isn't as obvious, so usually it will be typed in a smaller character because of the screen size.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it more difficult to find out that we're actually falling for a phish on a phone versus on a desktop computer or laptop.
And I'd have to imagine it's a greater element of trust as well. As you point out, while many of us and we can sort of debate how well that that training or information has been absorbed, I think many more people would understand that something like this coming on email looks suspicious than would necessarily someone who's getting this via text message. It's a trust play, it seems, as much as it's a gullibility or lack of care play.
Correct. So people tend to believe that there's no malware or no threats on mobile phones, but as a matter of fact, you must be as careful with your phone as you would with your notebook or desktop computer.
Yeah. So on that note, aside from perhaps software to help protect, what can the average consumer do to protect themselves against this kind of attack that's coming in via SMS?
So yes, there are security products. So I work for ESET. Mm-hmm. We offer security products for businesses and individuals, and we do have a product for Android phones where we can block these kind of threats. But I would say that in a more general way, we have so whenever you receive a message from something that promise you money or that your account is locked or whatever, would be to contact the actual, whether it's the Canadian Revenue Agency or utility service or whatever company that pretends this message, that this message pretends to be. is to contact that VIB via a secure channel. For example, you can actually phone them and say, hey, did you send me a refund or is this legitimate? And so one way is to call them. Of course, this is may take a long time.
Yeah.
So the other suggestion I would do is you can actually log in, type in the address of your bank or whatever company,
yeah.
And go log in without clicking the link on the email. And if your account is locked, well, you should see it there, right? So, or if you have a refund, you should also see it there. So if you don't see it, well, it's probably not real.
Yeah. So follow up and get in touch directly, unless, of course, that text or email is from a Nigerian prince, in which case you can probably just end the chain right there. I don't think those tend to end out well.
Unless you want to have a chat.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, there's always
a very
that
long
game.
Chat with
right?
them, but...
Yeah, just have an interesting conversation, see where it goes. So my primary audience is the solution provider folks who are selling ESET and supporting customers, particularly in the SMB space. What can they do? I mean, it sounds like the first and easiest play is simple awareness, right? Make sure your customers know that SMS is a potential risk vector. But what else can I do as a third party, as a consultant or channel partner to SMB customers? You know, especially when we still hear stories about partners who will, you know, attempt to test their customers' resilience or understanding, and will send executives an email that actually contains the text, "This link is malware. If you click it, you will get hacked." The exec will go ahead and click it because, hey, why not?
Yeah. So I guess I would suggest, like you said, like text messages should be part of the training for phishing. Like it's one of the multiple channels. Your phone mostly contains confidential information. And if there is malware running, then there's a chance that you actually can get your information out of your phone, just like your regular computer. I would, of course, suggest the more managing the different devices. Like there's just bring your own device philosophy, where people can bring in their phone. We have to be very careful about that, because the IT people do not control the everything that's running on there, compared to, let's say, they have a managed solution for notebooks. So I would definitely suggest that at least they run some kind of security solutions, like our product for Android, for example. That would be a very very good start to at least add a layer of protection, and maybe, you know, protect someone from a fish. Whether it could be for business, if you're targeted by a particular group, we've seen before the espionage group would use, in targeted attacks, would use SMS as a first stage of a full chain of exploit. Now, we're not talking about the same kind of attacks than the phishing we've been talking about, but it does exist. So we have to be extra careful.
All right. You know, interesting thing just popped to mind. I know what I can do when I receive a spam email. You know, either my anti-malware of choice will probably prompt me to do something about it, or there's always, you know, the old spam busters email account that I can just forward it to if I want to feel like I'm playing some role in making sure that these things are getting noticed. When I receive this kind of phishing SMS, what can I do?
Well, first thing would be to ignore it.
Don't click.
Delete it. Delete it if you can.
Yeah.
And secondly, I would say that it can be reported to the CRTC. The CRTC does, so they have a team that fights against phishing, whether it's email or, well, spam in general, whether it's email or text messages. And I know that I've been reporting stuff to them. I know the form is quite long and, you know, there's lots of information to type in. But I think it's worth it. Even though you don't have, like, feedback instantly, like, so they won't call you, like, the next day saying thanks. But if they have enough complaints, then they can actually justify that to do something about it. So in this particular case of Canada Revenue Agency phishing, I guess that if they receive a lot of complaints, then they can open an investigation. And if it's not already done, I don't know, but they can open some kind of investigation and be able to track them, maybe.
All right. Brilliant. Mark Chen, thanks for taking the time and giving us yet another reason to be suspicious of offers of the government giving us money.
All right. Thanks for having me. It was a nice chat.
Paul, thanks so much for taking the time once again, and nice to finally meet you in person after doing, what, four or five of these over the phone over the last year or so.
Great to be here, Rob, and great to finally put the face to the name. And I know the voice, but good to finally put the face to the voice. So thanks for doing this with me.
So we are here at Sage Sessions, which is the annual roadshow partner-customer kind of event here in Toronto. And part of the event here is you guys released a report on kind of the tax impact on small business. I guess probably the easiest way to throw this open is can you kind of share some of the findings of your, especially as it's a rather timely, release, obviously, as we're all just dealing with the hangover of tax day here in Canada. Can you share some of the results of your findings on sort of the impact of tax and tax policy on SMB?
Sure, love to. Yeah, we just issued the report. We went out to about 3,000 companies across 11 different markets, including Canada, of course. I think and most of it was focused on discovering that the micro businesses, so the smaller couple of person companies, seem to be most exposed, and they have the highest tax burden. So, you know, on average, they found in the study that, you know, at least 20 days per year are being spent on tax administration tasks by these smaller companies. And as I'm sure we'll get into as we discuss this, I mean, that's pretty overbearing for a small company who's trying to get ramped up. And also that maybe the current tax system here in Canada is not aligned to support those microbusinesses as much as it could. So it disproportionately favors the larger companies that maybe have a little more resources and, you know, tend to actually proportionally pay less tax than a smaller business would. So really, we need to be looking at, you know, how can we help these companies? How can we, you know, drive some procedural change with the government that will help them be more flexible? I mean, really, if you're a small business, you need to be focusing on building that business, building your brand equity, getting to market. You're probably doing it 20 hours of the day with a couple of people. So, you know, overburdening with administration tasks is not ideal. And, you know, that leads to things like, you know, what are we doing around digitization, et cetera, to make it easier ongoing so that it's not some big thing that I'm spending a lot of time on through the year, but as I do it progressively throughout the year or I enable it through a more digital ecosystem, that it's simpler.
Right. And I can I certainly, at least to a degree, feel this pain to lift the kimono a little bit. We are a two-person organization, so we fit right in this demographic. And yes, obviously, for a micro business, the number of total hours you're spending on something like dealing with tax and tax policy is minute compared to a large organization. But as a percentage of the available hours to work for the whole organization, it has to be higher.
Exactly.
What is it, though, about policy, about the nature of these micro businesses that makes that impact so much higher on those of us who are on the smaller side of things?
Well, I think part of it is just what we've been talking about, that the companies are smaller. As you said, you're a two-person shop. I mean, many of our customers here at Sage are micro or small businesses. They're solopreneurs or they're a couple of people. Do you have enough time to know what the heck the tax policies are? How you're supposed to be filing or collecting information, what am I supposed to be doing with all my receipts? Like, there's just a lot of information to go through never mind just, the actual technical filing that has to happen at the end of the year. So I think just the size and having the ability to have people focused on that task, the person or people that are doing it are probably not their main competency is dealing with tax. So maybe you're missing opportunities to optimize your tax, or are you being fully compliant with the way it's being filed? I think the fact that the tax bill can be higher for a smaller company is a burden as well. So maybe cash flow is king for a small business. Cash flow, right? So if you have a cash flow issue because of a big tax bill that might have come your way, because maybe perhaps you didn't know what was going to happen, that maybe has a downstream effect on your suppliers and different providers in your ecosystem. And now you can just sort of see the wheels start to kind of rust up across the ecosystem from all that. Again, long hours, small business, trying to deal with tax. And I think one thing that maybe is a little bit overlooked that we came on the report is, would it disincent investment in small business is the fabric of how we grow the economy. Still 99% of businesses in Canada are small and medium-sized businesses. So if it feels like it's overburdening or the tax system isn't favorable to those small businesses, do I disincent investment in this country from elsewhere, or disincent young people from people from any walk of life or phase in life from getting into a business, right?
Now, this must be something, I guess, of a mixed bag for your partner base in particular, because on one hand, you have partners who are, or many of your partners are, these solopreneurs or micro businesses themselves, and many of them are supporting those small businesses, micro businesses. Fortunately, hopefully, many of your partners would be among the more conversant in these tax policies. On the other hand, though, they have to support that long tail of micro businesses that you describe that are not necessarily and really shouldn't be experts on taxation. Can you speak to sort of how this impacts your partner base?
Partner base? Yeah, I mean, I think, our partners, if I define them, would be any kind of partner that's doing implementation or support or managed services of any kind for a customer, putting in a business management solution, or our accountants and bookkeepers, or there's over 15,000 of them in Canada who are part of our partner base. So those for sure are very conversant on tax, have to also be staying abreast of policy changes, staying on track of how they need to be managing for their customers, but are also making a big push to digitization, which I mentioned earlier themselves, as are the people in our partner community that deal with maybe bigger size customers. So I think, making it just as easy, treat them just like you do the end customer, make it just as easy for them to ingest the policy changes, ingest the filing rules, how what I need to do to be compliant, and give me all the digital tools I need through every phase of the process. And think about a slightly larger company that's still a small business. I mean, have data scattered all over the place, and who's going to aggregate up that data for filing purposes and et cetera. So, I mean, making sure that they have the ability to do that for their customers readily and timely is just as important as the actual end customer filing the tax, because many of them are doing it on their behalf or putting the systems in place that enable them. Yeah.
So we've kind of defined the problem and outlined the nature of the challenge. What can we do about it? Sort of two lenses here, both from a government and policy point of view. How can tax code and the system do a better job for this micro business that you describe? And also, as we know, government doesn't necessarily move, doesn't change overnight. In the meantime, as we wait for those benefits to come to us, what can small businesses do, micro businesses do, to make the situation better for themselves as make this as advantageous to themselves as possible?
Sure. One encouraging point of this is that although their tax burden is overweighted on small micro businesses, in Canada, we're actually not quite as bad off as some others. So we're spending about 1.6% of our time on pure tax, which, in a percentage-wise sounds small, but in hours time, it's still 21% of your total administration work. No offense to our Commonwealth neighbors over in the UK, but they came out kind of the worst in this study, where they're spending close to 6% of their time on this burden, which is why in the UK you see a big movement towards digitization of tax, digitization of the government. There's a huge Go Digital program happening in the UK. So Canada is still performing well if you stack rank, but still it's a lot of days. I mean, 21, that's like a month out of it's a working month out of your time just going through the tax issues for a micro business, which is a lot. So what can we do about it? I think, you know, have a say. Digitization I talked about, and not to sort of bemoan that, but I think if we can be speaking up to government, looking for the right training, you know, provide me online or digital app-driven options to guide me on what I need to be doing for tax, move towards mandating in some way that smaller micro businesses are using digital tools, because right now only half, I think, of those micro businesses or small medium businesses in Canada are currently using any kind of digitized accounting or payments management software, anything like that. So are we mandating and training and pointing people to the right tools to enable them to spend less time on this? And really, if you're doing, we have all those tools in place, it should be kind of taking care of itself throughout the year. It shouldn't have to be, I'd go spend 21 days straight trying to figure this stuff out. I think things that are coming like artificial intelligence, machine learning, collective intelligence, although feeling like maybe a little further out, are still really close to the horizon for folks. So automation becomes key. So if I have the digital foundation in place and now my business is running and I'm plugged into what comes from the government as far as policy, et cetera, goes, and I have a lot of AI-driven or machine learning-driven automation behind the scenes, then it could be guiding me, hey, you forgot to attach a digitized photo of this receipt for your business luncheon or whatever it might be. That's just one example of thousands I'm sure we could put in place that could help people guide throughout the process. So I think having those underlying technologies in place to support folks. And I think, you know, if you're a small business owner, the best thing is raise a voice, right? So there's a lot of people working in government, people that we can be, you know, writing to, sending emails to, going to visit, calling, encouraging this move to digitization, encouraging lightening the load on those who are trying to get started, because today's micro business is tomorrow's large enterprise employing thousands of people in various parts of the country. So I think really kind of raising the voice and making sure that we can get rid of, you know, if only half the companies are using any kind of digital way to manage administrative tasks and tax filing, the more and more we can get them digitized, the more the manual work goes away and they can focus on building that business.
Perfect. We mentioned off the top, we're here at Sage Sessions in Toronto. We just started the morning with sort of the keynotes, and you provide a little bit of an overview of the business in Canada and sort of the opportunity that you see. Obviously, a guest speaker. Can you talk a little bit about sort of the goals of Session and sort of where it goes from here in terms of partner experience with both this session and other sessions that may be happening nationwide?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, I said it in my speech this morning, I love this part of the year when we come out and do Sage Sessions across Canada. So here we have probably over 600 at least customers, and the customers of all sizes, small, those micro businesses we've been talking about, small, mid-sized, right up to large enterprises that are here. A lot of our big partners are here, our partners who are doing work directly with clients, as well as our technology partners, our accountants and bookkeepers are all here. So today we have the sessions where we've had some value that we're trying to provide through the keynotes, what's happening in the market, you know, share some business insights from John Garrett, who has, you know, the Green Apple podcast, was a great guest speaker. And then throughout the rest of the day, while we're sitting here right now, people will be in various sessions learning, whether I'm a small business, big enterprise, learning about payments and banking, learning how to, just as we talked about, what does it mean to be more efficient at filing tax or automating your business processes so you can focus on running your business, what new features are coming in a product that they might have, because we have people who are existing customers and people who are exploring Sage. And then tomorrow we'll have a full day just for our partners, and in parallel will be a full day for our accountants and bookkeepers. So they'll go deeper on, okay, what do we need to do together to provide a better experience for you as a partner, for our collective end customers, for the accountants. They get into all of that kind of, you know, the burden of administration work, a lot of talk around how you pivot to the cloud. So you have a lot of practices or maybe still have some clients who are the typical shoebox client, for example, is bringing in a box of receipts. Talk about digitizing tax, like coming in with 18 shoeboxes full of paper is not the most automated, digitized way to do it. So a lot of people are, you know, moving over to cloud solutions, supporting their customers on cloud. And if I'm just using an app with Sage, for example, to track all my expenses and do all my invoicing, take pictures and file all my receipts, and then that's just plugging right into a cloud platform that your accountant or bookkeeper is using, then it's a lot easier. So we're here in Toronto doing this for the next couple of days. We'll be out in Vancouver at the end of the summer. We're also doing an accounting tour across Canada where we'll be hitting close to 20 cities and like in every province and city and town across Canada. So we'll be bringing insights into what I was speaking about around accounting. So training on accounting, on our cloud accounting solutions, but also how to do all the various sort of tasks that go with accounting. So we'll be in a city near someone in Canada over the next couple of months and through the summer. And we do this because we've heard loud and clear from our customers that they do want to hear from Sage. Last year when we did this, we went across the country as well. We hit over 5,000 people. And they do come out. We typically sell out these sessions. People want to learn what's new, how they can better run their business, learn from peers. I think a lot of the value, we talked about this in the morning session, is being here for a full day or a couple of days with like-minded business professionals, someone that's in your same stage of business growth, or talking to a partner, or talking to someone at Sage you might not always get to meet. So it's really important for us to do this. It's a key part of, you know, what we will continue to do at Sage. We were out in the market pretty much every month last year, and we'll continue to do so. And for those that are doing business south of the border, these sessions are also running down the U.S., I think in 5 or 6 cities down there. So, yeah.
Brilliant. I hope the rest of sessions continues to go well for you, and thanks so much for taking the time, as always.
Thank you, Rob. Always a pleasure.
So there you have it, a couple of interesting viewpoints on issues around tax, courtesy of Marc Kitchen and Lavelle, and Paul Struthers. I'd like to thank Marc Kitchen and Paul for their time, and thank Sage and ESET for their sponsorship of the site, and of course, thank you for listening. It's an interesting show, and I know I learned a lot. Now, let us not think of taxation again until... who am I kidding? Hey, the Channel Buzz podcast will be back real soon. It's a busy time in the industry. My colleague Mark Cox and I are keeping very busy, keeping an eye on the things that are shaping the business for you. So keep an eye on us in your favorite podcast player and on the site, channelbuzz.ca. But until then, I'm Robert Dutt for channelbuzz.ca, and I'll see you around the channel.